Straight Talk from Israel.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
Hello, and welcome to Soul Talk. This is Leora Mandel. I'll be joined with Rabbi David Aaron after the break. I think that all of us like having the feeling of a sense of power and control in our lives. Now, not necessarily power like I have power over you, I can control you. Even just in our own personal lives, to feel like we have some sense of control of ourselves, control of the situations that we're in, control of our own emotional state. Obviously, I think we all know that we don't have full control over ourselves, over situations that happen to us, over definitely not over other people in our lives. But we wouldn't want to live feeling that we are just powerless. There's nothing we can do to change a situation, especially if we're in a situation where maybe feel a little bit stuck, where we're not happy with the way things are going. We want to feel empowered. That's the big word, empowered, to feel that we can make a change. If I'm not happy with what's going on in my life, I am empowered to change it. And as much as that's true, there's times in our life where we are really made to be aware of the fact that we are powerless. There's nothing I can do in this situation. All I can do is turn to God. God is the one who can help me through this situation. And the truth is, even when we think we do have some sort of power, some sort of ability to make a change, that's still somewhat of a fallacy, because ultimately it is only God who even gives us that power, that ability to make the changes that we can make. And it's the times when we are fully aware that we are powerless that it makes us aware that all the times, even when we think like we do have an ability to micromanage and change and oversee and control a situation, that that's because God is allowing us to have that, and that it's all really coming from Him. What is so interesting is that in the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, and again, this applies to all the 12-step programs for so many different kinds of addictions or places where one is really stuck in life, the first step is that we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives have become unmanageable. It's so interesting that instead of saying, I can control the situation, this first step towards recovery, sometimes when we're stuck in a place and we need to get help, it's not saying, I can make the change. It's actually saying, no, I actually really am powerless. Give it up. Give up that sense of control. Give up that sense of power. To some degree, you'd almost imagine it's counterintuitive. But then who's controlling the situation? If I'm not, how is this situation hopeless, totally out of control? And the point is, no, we have to come to believe that a power greater than ourselves can restore us to sanity. Make a decision to turn our lives over to the care of God. And so many people have been helped by this reminder, this recognition. Obviously, this is a very involved program of how we go about this, but recognizing we have to turn power over to God. When we return, I want to get a better understanding of the spiritual principles behind how this works. When we return, Soul Talk, Rabbi David Aaron and Leora Mandel.
Israel is located in one of the most volatile areas in the world. Israel is an island of stability in a sea of war and unrest. In the midst of this turmoil, Israel stands out as a beacon of order and human progress. Each week we update you on what's happening in this, the Jewish state, a true light unto the nations. This is Jay Shapiro. Join me every Thursday on Israel News Talk Radio.
Be biblical.
Be beautiful.
Wear your crown.
Repping is my crown.
Do what married Jewish women have been doing for thousands of years. Celebrate the art of head wrapping. I'm Andrea Grinberg from Rapunzel.com. We have beautiful scarves, stunning accessories, scarves for faith, scarves for healing, and scarves for fun. Rapunzel.com. That's Rapunzel with a W. Or click on our banner on the Israel News Talk Radio homepage.
Rapunzel.com. Beautiful scarves, stunning accessories, paired with tutorials, support, and a vibrant community to give you everything you need to start and perfect your head covering journey.
Don't forget, join the Rapunzel community group on Facebook to see, learn, and share your beautiful wraps. That's Rapunzel with a W on Facebook.
I love Rapunzel.
I love Rapunzel.
I love Rapunzel.
Get 10% off your purchase with promo code RADIO. Go now to Rapunzel.com.
Soul Talk. This is Leora Mandel with Rabbi David Aaron. Rabbi Aaron, I have a friend who is in a 12-step program, and as much as I'm aware in general about the power of the 12-step program, Alcoholics Anonymous, and there's so many, it can be 12 steps to overcome any kind of addiction, from drugs to alcohol to technology to overeating, and there are so many different varieties these days. But she recently lent me her book, which is referred to as the Big Book, which is really the foundational book that overviews all the tenets and goes the steps of these 12-step programs that have shown so much success in helping people who are so stuck. So many have given up hope of ever overcoming an addiction, overcoming just what's overtaken their lives in such negative ways, and people have really, really turned a new leaf and been able to really create a sense of hope and meaning and living healthy and meaningful and happy lives. And what is so interesting as I'm reading this book, and the steps really put this out there, is the whole big premise of the way that 12 steps work is that the first thing you have to do is recognize that, admit, I am powerless over whether it be alcohol or you fill in the blanks, and that my life has become unmanageable. And then from there, I have to go into believe that a power greater than myself can restore me to sanity, and then make a decision to turn our lives over to the care of God as we understand him. And as I think about this, I think it's almost counterintuitive, because I would almost imagine that when we are stuck in our lives, when something has taken over, we all have something, even if it's not what we'd actually call an addiction. But I think we all have places in our lives where we'd say, this is unmanageable, or I don't feel like I'm leading my life. There's something that has taken over me to some degree. And instead of me feeling like I'm in control, it is now controlling and dictating. You know, anytime we can't say no when we want to say no, that is happening to us. And you'd almost imagine, I would think, that the first step would be to say, you know what, I can control things. And I have an ability to stop what I don't like in my life. And here, the whole foundation is saying, no, I can't control anything. I need to recognize I have no power. All the power is in God's hands. And as a rabbi, I would love to understand this more from a spiritual perspective, from a Jewish perspective. How does this work? And this does work. This whole idea of recognizing I have no power, I have no abilities of my own, I have to turn it all over to God. All I have to come with is a desire to make a change. The rest is in God's hands. How does that all work?
Great, yes. Well, the first step, according to the secrets of Torah, is referred to as the sphere, the attribute of Malchus, which is an awareness, a mindset, that in and of ourselves, we are nothing. All the powers within me are not from me. It correlates to one of the names of God, which is Elohim. And probably the English translation of that word would be best the word Almighty, that God is the power and the owner of all powers, and that in and of myself, I'm not capable of doing anything. I'm sure we've discussed this before. Like right now, there are, I recently heard 80 muscles, but I first heard 17 muscles, but recently I heard a talk that said there's 80 muscles in our face, but whatever number of muscles in our face, right this very second, as I'm speaking, all those muscles have to work in perfect coordination for every syllable to come out of my mouth. Now, I don't know where there's place and space in my face for so many muscles, but more than that, I don't even know how to talk. I don't know how I'm doing what I'm doing. And so how could I possibly say that I'm talking when I don't know what I'm doing? I don't know how to do this. And so the name Elohim reminds us that all the powers within us are not from us. Now, as soon as a person has a deep understanding of that truth, then the more power to them. In other words, as soon as I realize all the powers within me are not from me, then that opens up a space in my life with what I call the law of reception, not the law of attraction, but the law of reception, where I'm now on that frequency that's able to receive tremendous power, godly power in my life. And therefore, in terms of that first step, our lives have become unmanageable. Now, not everybody's life has become unmanageable, but in this particular situation, a person really needs to understand that the only way they can pull themselves out of where they are is if they stop thinking it's me and that I have power. I have zero power. I'm like a radio. A radio unto itself has no power. It's just a device. It's an empty device that needs to be turned on and tuned, plugged in, turned on, and tuned in to the music. And then it becomes a vehicle that receives and transmits that music. But in and of itself, it's nothing. It has no power whatsoever on its own.
So, you know, this gets challenging because on the one hand, I appreciate and recognize we have to understand that all of, as you're saying, the radio, the power, the frequency, it's all coming from God. And if we don't recognize that, we lose sight of that, then we can get ourselves into trouble. On the other hand, there often is this feeling of we need to have some sense of self. There's like a healthy balance of self versus, I guess, ego is the part we have to get rid of here. And we talk about that a lot. It's getting rid of ego. And I think this is the point of recognizing it's not me, it's and putting God in the place of ego. But how do we figure out where is there some self? I mean, obviously you're saying we have to remove ourselves and make room for God, but where is self and where is ego and how do we find that?
Well, self is manifest in this choice to choose to believe and choose to receive powers much greater than myself. So I have the power to choose. That's why it says in the Talmud, Hakol bidei shamayim chutz meyirat shamayim. All is in the hands of heaven except awareness of recognition of reverence of heaven. That's my choice. So if I choose to recognize that all the powers within me are not from me, then I have now opened myself up for a flow of tremendous godly powers into me. And the power that I have is to choose to recognize that more than that choice, I am powerless. Now, that choice is huge, the choice to recognize that the powers within me are not from me. And in addition, not that this is what 12 Steps is talking about, but in Judaism, in order to be receptive to these godly powers in my life, I have to have a mindset of the desire to serve, which very much does tie into 12 Steps and positive psychology, that a person feels good when they do good. And so a radio, going back to the metaphor, a radio in and of itself is nothing. What it can do is it can, again, so to speak, if it had choice, it could plug in, turn on, and tune in. And then the music would come. But there's no reason for a radio to receive music unless it's going to serve to bring that music to other people. And so the radio's mindset is I'm a receiver, transmitter, I'm a server, and I'm here to serve. And so too, when a person lives their life with this service attitude, a service-driven life, whereby I am seeking to open myself up to receive tremendous powers of my life to be used to be in greater service, to bring a greater good to the world, or to myself, or to other people, whatever. But it's to be in a state of service.
So when we say all, when you're saying all the powers within me are not from me, there's a part of me that likes to think of that in what we see as positive traits, right? The fact that I have energy, the fact that I have skills, certain abilities, I have to recognize don't take all the credit for all these abilities and skills that you have. These were given to you as gifts from God. And that's very important. But would we also say that about certain what sometimes seem to be almost innate challenging parts of ourselves too, like the part of me that maybe more naturally has a short fuse or more naturally doesn't have the patience to wait things out, or and therefore I get myself into trouble because I sort of maybe make, you know, decisions too quick before I think them through. Is that also the powers within me that are not from me?
No, it's a choice that I'm making. In other words, let's say, you know, within me is a tremendous flow of divine care. Now, the question is, have I kind of become overcaring and therefore ended up becoming overbearing? That was a choice I made with the power. Did I become overcaring and therefore I started getting angry when things don't go the way I want them to go because I care so much? So it's not like God gives you bad attributes. There's only good. Now, I can make bad choices with that good, like a knife. There's nothing bad about a knife. There's nothing good about a knife. I choose what I'm going to do with a knife. And so, you know, so if the power of love enters my heart, I have to make a choice. Do I want to use the power of love in service to bring more love in the world, or do I take the power of love and use it in some selfish way, or do I apply love to loving racing cars? Like, what am I doing with the powers? That's a choice I have. Do I choose to use the powers in my life for serving to bring more God into the world, which is the same thing as saying bringing more good into the world?
So then ultimately, I really have to evaluate myself, and anything that I see as negative, it's not that it's necessarily negative. It's a trait that I have made choices to use in a negative way, but that also means I can take that same trait and I can try to figure out a way to use it in a positive way. But the root of it itself is not positive nor negative. It's, so to speak, neutral. It just depends on how I choose to use it.
Right. Actually, we just learned that in this holiday, Shavuot. Because it's very strange, in the holiday of Pesach, there's a lot of bad talk against what's called chametz, which is leavened bread, and we get rid of it, and we burn it, and it represents the evil inclination. But then suddenly we get to Shavuos, and we're bringing bread on Shavuos. So maybe after the break, we'll explore that deeper.
When we return, Soul Talk, Rabbi David Aaron and Liora Mandel.
The Tamar Yonah Show.
Tamar, she's sassy.
She's smart.
She's funny.
But she's also a real Jewish mother.
Hi, everybody. I'm Tamar Yonah. And yes, I can be all of those things, but at Israel News Talk Radio, I'm here to bring you the news stories and guests that you may not hear anywhere else. Join me live on air Sundays, Mondays, and Tuesdays for the most unique and bold talk radio in Israel.
The Tamar Yonah Show.
Welcome back to Soul Talk, Liora Mandel with Rabbi David Aaron. Understanding the spiritual underpinnings of the 12-step program, but understanding from a Jewish perspective how letting go of ourselves, our willpower, recognizing all the powers that we have really ultimately come from God, and that any positive change we're going to make in our lives is going to come with the help of God, but also that any traits that we have, there's no positive or negative traits, it's what we choose to do with them. So right before the break, Rabbi, you were talking about that on Pesach, we refrain from leavened bread, and it's specifically on Shavuot, these holidays are connected, but here we are bringing an offering of leavened bread.
Right. And so, you know, the only attribute that one could say would be negative would be ego. But the truth is that the positive side of ego is that a person feels good about themselves. The negative side of ego is they feel way too good about themselves, and they start to think that they're self-contained, self-sufficient, and independent, and they don't need anybody. So that's the negative side of it. But, you know, so on Pesach, we burn that chametz and we say ego is not good. But hopefully what we do is we refine it and we draw out of it some of the sparks that's behind ego, which is a desire to feel good about ourselves. Now, to be in a relationship with God and receive the Torah on Shavuos, you have to feel good about yourself. You have to feel that you're worthy of such a relationship with God, because that's what the Torah is. It's a relationship with God. And so if I think I'm nothing, and you can't have a relationship with nothing. A lot of people have problems in relationships because they feel so bad about themselves, they could never believe that someone would be interested in them. And so everything in our lives, we have to look at and say, you know, what's the positive? Like anger. Like anger is a bad trait, but on the other hand, it really is much rooted in caring. And you know, and so let's say, you know, evil's happening in the world and it doesn't anger me at all. It should anger you. But that kind of anger is an anger that should motivate you to fight evil, not to hurt good by being angry. And so everything has a spark of godliness in it, and we have to figure out how to use it in service.
What is so interesting is because, again, in the 12-step program, one of the premises of it that keeps repeating itself through the book is that if we don't turn to God, we're not going to be able to get ourselves out of where we're stuck. And it sounds like here what you're explaining, the reason why is because there's godliness even within what seems to possibly be destructive right now. There is godliness within it if we know how to channel it the right way. And if we can tap into the godliness within and learn how to channel that trait in a positive direction, then instead of it eating us up, it actually fills us up because God's in it and it's now being constructive.
All right. Well, I'll tell you an interesting story. A number of years ago, I was giving a talk in Toronto to teenagers, a public talk. And at the talk, there were two adults, which was, they seemed out of place, and they didn't seem to be the parents of the teenagers because they were older than the teenagers, but not old enough to be their parents. And after the talk, these two older people, these adults, walked up to me and said, "Can we get some private time with you?" I said, "Okay, sure." So we went into an office area in this building, and they took out of their briefcase or their backpacks my book, The Secret Life of God. And they said, "We are both addicts in 12 steps, and we have been studying your book." And they showed me how it's underlined and doggy-eared, and they were like, "Really?" And they said, "This book has changed our lives." And this is what he said. He said, in the 12 steps, the third step is there's a higher power that will help us. And, you know, or you, as you mentioned, you know, God as we understand him. But they said, but a lot of people in the 12 steps don't understand him. You know, like it's predicated on there's a God that will help me, but I have to believe that. So to turn myself over to God or to a higher power, there needs to be some discussion of who is this higher power? And why would this higher power be interested in my life? Now, 12 steps, understandably, in order to remain non-denominational, they can't answer that question. And so they basically say, "Well, God of my understanding." But I don't have an understanding because I don't understand why would God be interested in my life. And so that's something that everybody in 12 steps has to figure out, which is, where can I get some clarity on who is this God and why did he create me? What does he expect of me? And more important, why would he even be interested in my life and my addiction? Why would he care less? He's got a whole world to take care of. He's going to pay attention to me. There's a lot of assumptions there that I believe are not assumptions, but for a lot of people, that's just an assumption. And, you know, who is this God that's going to help me?
Those are huge questions. But ultimately, I have to say, I think your book of, you know, the book, you have books that really, really delve into, even those of us who, you know, I think the 12 steps is interesting because you can have non-God believers. In fact, there's a whole chapter on agnostics and trying to convince people who don't necessarily believe in God why they should and how it will help them. But I think even those of us who maybe from the time we were born were brought up in a God-focused environment, understanding, grappling with the questions that you're bringing to the table are still important because God, as we understand him, even we, so to speak, believe in God, it will hit a certain point in our life where we will still grapple with the questions that you're putting on the table right now. I believe in God, but why does he care about me? I'm going through the struggle. Is he even aware that I'm going through it? Has he brought it upon me? Is he going to help me out of it? How can he help me? All these questions are so core, even if you've been believing your whole life.
Right. Well, a lot of people in the 12 steps have been turning to my books because my books directly talk about who is Hashem and who are you and why are we created and why would Hashem be interested in us. But there's another issue that makes it more complicated, and that's why I think some people will have a hard time with 12 steps because for most people, God is really a projection of their parents. You know, because my parents are the first gods of my life. They, so to speak, created me. They created the world I live in, the home. They set the rules. They administer the rules. They determine the reward and punishment. And so a lot of people, actually, I read a book was very interesting called it was a chapter in the book called The Psychological Profile of Three Atheists. And in this book, this fellow presented what he believes are three kinds of atheists and how their atheism is the direct result of their broken relationship with their parents. And that, you know, very often when people don't believe, they think they have a philosophical, you know, question about God, but they don't. Very often it's not a philosophical question, it's a psychological problem. That's very different, a psychological problem and a philosophical question. A philosophical question is easy to answer. But a psychological problem doesn't need an answer. It needs a solution. Something inside is stuck. And that problem very often is rooted in my parents. Because my parents are, the, so to speak, the first God in my life. And therefore, I very easily assume that God is like my parents because I've never met any other authority figure. And so, and that really messes a lot of people up. In fact, a lot of people probably, you know, in a certain way turn to alcohol because they had such broken childhoods.
So in repairing the relationship with God, meaning it's a big step. And I think there is often truth. There's this projection of that relationship, that hierarchical relationship, and that it colors and makes a challenge for us to be able to open ourselves up to God, even to see God as loving, as caring, as interested in our lives. What are the steps one would take to try to close that gap and be able to, especially when you have one conception of God that is so painful, either you don't believe in him or you just, there is also that anger towards God, or I can't believe that God actually has any care, to then being able to merge into the kind of relationship that will actually enable a person to free themselves and use God as strength instead of anger towards God for, you know, the challenges that they're going through.
Well, I think the first step in this process is to realize that it's very likely that my orientation to God has been colored and influenced by my connection to my parents. And so if a person's having a tough time with God, I think it's important for them to at least explore the possibility that that's because I've created God in the image of my parents. You know, the Bible says that God created man in his own image. But we seem to be creating God in our own image, and it's not even our image. It's really the image of our parents or some authority figure in our lives or a combination of them. But your issue or your relationship or your attitude to authority, a higher authority, is very deep inside. And I need to appreciate that, you know, that if I grew up in a home that was very unforgiving, then, you know, my inability to believe that God could be forgiving is very much stuck in that I never grew up feeling forgiven. Or, you know, in one of my courses, a girl broke down, started to cry, and she asked to speak to me. And I said, "What's wrong? What did I say that, you know, upset you in the class?" She said, "No, it's not what you said in the class. It's just, you're just nice to me. And you have no reason to be nice to me. And I'm not used to that. You know, I grew up kind of having to earn my parents' love, and here you're a stranger and you're nice to me." And I thought, "Well, why shouldn't I be nice to you?" And she said, it was to her like an incredible, you know, realization that you don't have to earn someone's care. People could genuinely care about you with no interest of getting anything in return. She never experienced that. So now take it to God, where, you know, we believe that God loves us unconditionally and is always there for us and on our sides and as not trying to trip us up. But I'm sure I've many times mentioned the Calvin and Hobbes cartoon where Hobbes, the toy tiger, turns to Calvin and says, "Do you believe in God?" And Calvin says, "Well, somebody's out to get me."
When we return, Soul Talk, read by David Aaron and Leora Mandel.
In a time where feelings have become fact, where rational thought and common sense has disappeared, one man stands above it all.
I'm Howie Sobiker, your political hitman.
Political Hitman airs every Tuesday at 11:59 p.m. North American time, 7 a.m. Israeli time, only on Israel News Talk Radio.
Are you interested in transforming your life, drawing closer to the Creator and uncovering the deeper meanings and hidden treasures in the Hebrew Bible?
Then join me, Rav Yitzhak Michelson.
And me, William Hall.
On the Science of Kabbalah, where we are seeking to narrow the gap between what we understand of our physical and spiritual worlds. So make sure to tune in every Tuesday at 5 p.m. Israel time, 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, here on Israel News Talk Radio.
Hello, welcome back to Soul Talk. Leora Mandel with Rabbi David Aaron. Right before the break, you brought up the Calvin and Hobbes cartoon where Calvin's asked, do you believe in God? And he says, well, I know that someone's out to get me. And that, unfortunately, that is so, that is the belief of so many people. If they are going to believe in God or do say that there's a God that exists, it is that kind of relationship. And yet, as we're talking about here with the 12 steps, the recognition that we are powerless over getting ourselves out of any sort of addiction, any place we're really stuck. And again, you don't have to be addicted to realize that this is a truth in life, that we need to rely on God to help us out of a situation that we're in. But if we're going to view God as someone out to get me, that's not the kind of God I'm going to turn to help me get out of my mess that I can really feel like is going to, you know, if I can't get myself out, why would a God who's out to get me help get me out? So,
now, but add to that, that they feel that God is angry at them because it's your fault that you became an addict and you want me to help you. You know, like imagine a kid grew up with those kind of parents that a kid got himself into problems, called their parents up to help, and they said, I'm not going to help you. You know, you got yourself into this. You have to take yourself out of this. And so this is what they live with. And now somebody says to them, well, God's going to help you. They say, they're not used to that. They don't know even what to do with that. They never met any power greater than themselves that said, I'll help you, even though this is all your fault. And then also dealing with, maybe this is not all my fault. Maybe, you know, I actually had a precondition of inclination to this kind of a thing, which for some reason God created me with that. And so he knows what I need and he's going to help me use it in some, you know, in some great way. But that's why it was really interesting when these guys said that we couldn't get anywhere with 12 steps because we kept getting stuck on the step that there's a higher power that will help us and we have to surrender ourselves to this higher power. And we just had no clue who is this higher power and why would he help us? And without solving that solution, you know, a lot of people will not get past the third step.
So the kind of relationship that we have with God makes all the difference in whether or not God can help us get out of where we're stuck.
Well, God can help you, but if you're not willing to believe that he will help you, then it doesn't matter. You know, it's like, you know, the story, I'm sure everybody's heard this story about a fellow who's drowning and he turns to God and he says, please, God, save me, save me. And somebody comes by in a rowboat and says, jump in. The guy says, no, no, God will save me. And then the water gets closer up to his mouth. He says, please, God, save me. And a helicopter comes by and he says, jump in. He says, no, no, God will save me. And then the guy dies. And he gets to heaven. He says, God, I trusted in you and you didn't save me. He says, well, I sent you a rowboat. I sent you a helicopter. You know, it's like, so much needs to be clarified of what does it really mean for God to help me and how will that help look? Like, what am I expecting the help to appear as?
So what does it look like? Because you said earlier, what we have is choice, right? That the powers within me are not from me, but we have the power to choose. So sometimes it feels like we don't necessarily, like especially when talking about addiction, that we don't have the power to choose anymore. And yet again, the way to get out of this loss, we've lost our power, is to recognize that we have no power, recognize it all comes from God. And then all of a sudden, for some people, they're really able to start rebuilding their lives and then have power again to make better choices.
Right, but the biggest power here and that jumpstarts the whole process is the power to recognize that there's a power greater than me that will help me. That's a power. That's a big choice. That's not a small thing to do. So to say, I can't help myself at all. No, there is something that you can do and must do to jumpstart this whole process. It's to recognize that you are powerless. There's a tremendous power in recognizing that. That's not a small thing. You know, it's tremendous humility right there to know that, hey, in and of myself, I'm nothing. I need to turn to power greater than myself. And then I have to really believe, and this takes effort, that this power is going to be there for me. And the amazing thing is that the more a person believes that God is there for them, the more they'll actually experience that God is there for them. But they have to really believe that God is there for them. And if they grow up with this angry, you know, punishing God who's got some big ego and is only there to control you and demands worship from you, how is a person going to believe in that God that's going to help them? So there's a tremendous amount of power that goes into, so to speak, recognizing this powerlessness and turning my life over to God and believing enough in God that he'll be there. That itself is the choice. The belief is a huge choice.
It is huge. You know, it's interesting as you're talking, I'm thinking that even if we're not in a point of addiction in our lives, but I think there's all times where we hit a certain point where we realize there's nothing I can do in this situation. And it makes us completely aware of the fact that it's all, you know, we have no power. It's all in God's hands. And if we turn to God, then we are more calm in the situation. If we don't turn to God and are fretting over the situation when there's nothing we can do about it, we're stressed out. But it's ironic that really, even in small areas where we think we have control, we also don't, because ultimately, we, as you're saying, we can just choose how we're going to respond to any situation that comes. But how many day-to-day situations come up? Little things like trying to get to an appointment on time. And I think I can do everything I there's choices I'm making, but ultimately the result of my getting to my appointment on time is because God enabled me to get to my appointment on time. A million and one things could have gone wrong to make that not happen. But I think we're so used to, when we're not in a crisis mode, we're not in a situation that makes us realize you really don't have control here, that we're so used to trying to control and oversee and, you know, manipulate situations that make it seem like we have control, that I think for many of us that aren't in a real tight spot, we often lose sight of the fact that really we aren't in control. And it's sometimes those tight spots that are uncomfortable, but they remind us about the importance that ultimately, really, we don't give up control and recognize that God is running the show and we have to choose to go with him, but stop, you know, feeling like we're the ones who are really running the show here.
Right. But we do have to understand that we do have control, but the control is we can control the attitudes of what we believe. What I believe is my attitude. If I have a winning attitude, I believe that God cares about me. I believe that God is on my side. I believe that God is not against me. I believe that God wants to help me. I believe that God believes in me. There's a lot of work in there, and there's a lot of control in there. It's just we do have control, but we've confused ourselves where the control is. We have no control over what happens generally. We have control in how we interpret what happens and the meaning we give it. And that will all be determined by our beliefs. If a person believes that the universe is an accident, well, then I'm going to see everything in the light of an accident. And I say, well, there's really no meaning to what happened, because there's no meaning to anything that's happening, because it's all one big accident. If I believe that the universe is perfectly designed and every single event in the universe is of perfect design, then I have an attitude that there's good here, there's opportunity here, there's wisdom at work here. God knows what he's doing and he runs the world, and it's going to be okay, the more I believe that and try to live my life based on that.
It is amazing how one's perspective can totally change the color of every aspect of our lives. Depending on the perspective that we have, everything that happens in our lives can see it totally differently depending on the perspective that we have.
You know, most people don't realize the most important work they need to do, which most people don't do, is to determine what you actually believe. Because that's going to influence everything in your life. Everything in your life. You know, there's a saying that we say when we say the blessing after our meals. Below ra'iti tzaddik ne'ezav. I've never seen a tzaddik, a righteous man, abandoned. And, you know, and when you read that, you say, actually, it's not true. I've seen many righteous people that are poor, many righteous people that are sick. So how could we say in good conscience every time we do the blessing after our meal, the lo ra'iti tzaddik ne'ezav, I never saw a tzaddik that has been abandoned. Well, one of the understandings of a tzaddik, or it's being translated as a righteous person, but to really understand a tzaddik, the word tzaddik comes from the word lahatzdik, Matzdik means to justify. And a tzaddik is a person that always justifies the ways of God. Everything that happens, the tzaddik says, God knows what he's doing. There's purpose here. Everything is ultimately fair. And everything ultimately is on our best interest. And he always justifies the ways of God. And if that's a tzaddik, then I've never seen a tzaddik who's abandoned. Because even if he had no money, even if he was sick, he would never, ever complain. He would only justify the ways of God and say, God knows what he's doing. There's some opportunity here. And so that's the definition of a tzaddik, that the tzaddik is not a person that will ever give off a vibe that they've been abandoned.
How do we get there?
By listening to our show every week.
No, because it's very important. Meaning that is recognizing that one can be in such a perspective, and that, again, that everything that happens, they're living with joy, because even when there's challenge, if you see challenge and pain as still having purpose, then even though you might be experiencing pain, at the same time, you're still living with a sense of joy and purpose and mission, a very different kind of life than feeling like everything's, you know, just imploding in your life and there's no purpose to it.
Right. Well, I mentioned on the show recently that when this corona thing happened, something got in me and I decided that I would take a course on anatomy, human anatomy. And it's had a profound effect on me because, you know, it's like, it's just blowing my mind how we are literally walking miracles. The inner workings of our body are completely incomprehensible. It's just unbelievable. The heart, the lungs, and you just go on and on and on. It's just an infinite network of just perfect wisdom of how our bodies and how this very moment we're speaking and thinking is just outrageous. And so my attitude is, when I get in touch with the wisdom that I see in front of me, why would I assume that my life is any less perfectly designed as my body?
And recognizing that there's design in our life, there's purpose. Recognizing there's a creator who's given us that purpose, it's our job to choose to see it, to see the mission, to see the purpose, and live our lives with that purpose. I want to thank you all for joining us, Soul Talk, Rabbi David Aaron and Leora Mandel.
Where can you get the inside news on Israel? At Israel News Talk Radio, we're dedicated to sharing Israel's inside story with the world by providing our listeners with news on Israeli politics, current affairs, and Israeli Jewish culture. The Israel News Talk Radio homepage also provides you, the listener, with useful information at your fingertips, with scrolling news headlines, weather, currency exchange, Shabbat candle lighting times, and so much more. Our radio programming is always accessible and on demand. We operate absolutely free of charge for everyone, everywhere. If you love what we do, partner with us now by becoming an Israel News Talk Radio supporter. With your support, you'll be inscribed on our Israel News Talk Radio Wall of Fame. There's nothing like us in the world. Be part of something great. Israel News Talk Radio, straight talk from Israel.
Howdy, this is Rita from League City, Texas, now living in Israel. And though my heart may have belonged to Texas, it now belongs to Israel and all the fantastic show hosts at Israel News Talk Radio.
Hi, this is Michael Solomon from Kiryat Arba, Israel. And why do I love listening to Israel News Talk Radio? Because I love listening to the interesting interviews they do and their news reporting that most other media sources don't cover.
Hey, this is Nicole Eko from Malmo, Sweden. It gets pretty cold here in Sweden, so I love cuddling up with a warm cup of tea while I listen to Israel News Talk Radio.
Hey, everybody, this is Frank Morris from Tennessee. Me and my dog Buster really love listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.
News, opinion, and more. You're listening to Israel News Talk Radio.